C1SP. Number 11B.
And that brings us to the fourth subject of principle, which is rather a long one. And this fourth subject takes up quite a few pages, because it seems that this part is one of the central proposition which we have to see through. It is the proposition of mind reading. Here we come now to that point where we must, where the phenomena of mind reading is examined and explained. And here again we will see that there is mind reading and mind reading, that there is so-called mortal mind reading, and that there is so-called, that there is immortal mind reading. And that if we don't see the see that there is a difference between mortal mind reading and immortal mind reading, that therefore then we are apt to misinterpret spiritualism as a science of spirit. That then, if we don't see that difference, we are apt to think that the phenomena of mind reading in spiritualism are really a proof of spirit and not of so-called spirits. The epitome I tried to formulate here is that I felt what she wants to say is that in spiritualism, thought is read from the standpoint of mortal mind, whereas in Christian Science, thought is read from the standpoint of immortal mind. So we have here two, you see, interpretation, two standpoints of interpretation. I think principle here explains the standpoint of interpretation. Should our standpoint of interpretation be the divine mind, which can only reveal its own nature, namely the universe of mind? Or is our standpoint mortal mind, which naturally again can only read what happens within the realm of mortal mind, but never in the realm of immortal mind? So spiritualism, which is based on the standpoint of mortal belief, of human belief, because it's personal, goes to persons, to spirits, therefore it goes out from the standpoint of a limited mind, and therefore it can only read what happens within the limitation of mortal mind. Or as I have said yesterday, and what spiritualists will tell you and confirm, is that certain spirits have only a very circumscribed realm of knowledge. That outside of that circumscribed realm, they have practically no knowledge. So we must see, you see, that whatever appears as communication from spirits, that whatever appears as thought reading, clairvoyance, and so on, that that is always happening within the realm of its own belief. And therefore, it's no use to resort to spiritualism in order to know something which is outside of the realm of mortal mind. Therefore, we cannot resort to spiritualism or hypnotism or clairvoyance or anything of those lines in order to know something about the reality. We never can. If we want to know something about reality and read reality, then we have to go to the origin of that realm, to the divine mind, and read the reality only from the standpoint of the divine mind, which is quite a different realm. She builds up this subject very distinctly through seven tones, which I like to distinguish, because she gives a real logical structure of mind reading. In the first tone of principle as mind, she shows that thought reading is possible, natural and not at all mysterious. You see, first of all, she takes away the mystery of thought reading, of any sort of thought reading, be it the thought reading in Christian Science or the thought reading in clairvoyance. She says that it is that reading thought is possible, that we can read thought, distant thought and near thoughts, absent mind and present mind, thoughts of people who have lived long ago and of those who are only here, that we can also read the thoughts of anonymous writers, just as well as of real writers, because nobody knows if Homer or Virgil have existed, but we read their thoughts, that is, we read the thoughts of those who have written it, whoever they may have been. And she makes here quite clear that we read the mind and not people. That it is always, you see, she begins with principle as mind, and says all at the bottom of everything is mind, our thoughts. That mind and thoughts matter and not people. It doesn't matter if people are far away or near, if people are still living or not, if they are anonymous or not, or known. People don't matter. What matters is mental. The mental is the stuff with which she deals here. It is irrelevant, really, if people have time. And what she wants to impress here is that she shows that we should drop that concept that it is difficult to read thought. You see, we have been brought up in the classical era and in the materialistic era, where it has been considered as absurd that one can read thought. And this is not so in many other parts of the world, especially not in primitive cultures. In primitive cultures, like in Abyssinia and so on, they have a very good trained set of people who can read anything that goes on in the mental realm of the world, that can read what is in a letter that comes from London to Addis Abeba, that he can read it just as well before it arrives as the one who reads it when it arrives. They are just trained in that year through hundreds and thousands of years. They are trained just as we are trained to think materially and then according to material law and only believe in material laws. It's just a matter of education. And so we shouldn't be surprised that primitive people and primitive culture that have devoted their time and their energies of reading the mental realm, just as we today are much more concerned with the material universe. But what is necessary is to break down in us the belief that thoughts cannot be read, that they are not tangible to consciousness. After she has shown that in that first paragraph with the side note reading thoughts, she goes on to a very important subject of principle as spirit, where she begins to show that we must see that there are classifications of realms, of mental realms, and that when the difference of the mental realms become too big, that they are so separated that they can no more blend, and that there is no more a reading of thought between these categories. She says that it is impossible for different mental realms to intercommune. See, first she said mortal mind reading is that mind reading, thought reading is possible, and that it does not depend on person, but on the element of thought reading, namely on thoughts. Then second, she goes and says, but we must see that there are different realms of different mental realms, and that there is no intercommunication between these different mental realms. She says that there is no intercommunion between different states of consciousness, between two different states of consciousness, between different mazes of consciousness. When the departed are in a different consciousness from ours, that unlike mental states cannot commune. You see, that different dreams have also different awakenings, and so differing consciousness, and brings out that there is no intercommunication between such differences as exist, for example, between a consciousness which is attained, if we have attained spiritual life, and a communion with material existence. He says there exists such a great gulf between spiritual mind and the material mind that there is no more intercommunication. That those who have reached spiritual life, really spiritual life, that they cannot anymore commune with its opposite. It's just impossible. We only can read thought within the realm of one's own stage of consciousness. Just as she says, that different dream mazes, that we can wander in different dream mazes. Though we may lie side by side in a bed, every one of the two can go into a dream and dream lots of things, and in spite of physical proximity, we have no intercommunication between them. And just as there is no communication between a mole and a human being, I don't know if Alan Boone would agree to that, but... anyway, I think that's jolly difficult. that there is no communication between a mole and a human being, that just in this way the departed can no more commune with those who still live here, because those who have gone through that experience of death, they certainly have awakened to a few truths which brings them forward and forward. And why should we go forward if we always want to go backward? Why should we have a tendency to spiritualize if the next thought would be to go back and materialize? It would be quite contrary to the trend of spirit. Yes, so she says that different awakenings really also... That different dreams and different awakenings betoken a differing consciousness. You know, I think that's so true, and we should remember that also in our life, that sometimes we come across people where we just feel, well, we can't really commune with them. They don't understand us. That our point of view in life and our attitude of life is already so much different than perhaps somebody else's that there just doesn't seem to be a ground on which to commune, where we understand each other, where theology doesn't understand anymore our standpoint of view, where medical people may not understand our point of view, where there is just not a common ground on which to meet. And so she shows here really, you see, that as we progress spiritually, that we separate ourselves from those who stay in an old belief. And that as we progress spiritually, that the gulf becomes wider and wider and wider. And I think sometimes we should remember that, because we sometimes think that we should be able to commune with another status of belief. What we can do, and what she shows afterwards, we can save. We can, through understanding, save. So, just to go back again to mind as the principle, as mind, first she says there is mind reading. What is this mind reading? First of all, she says, thought can be read. But she comes to the second, where spirit always brings order into the whole thing, where it doesn't leave everything in one big chaos, and so brings order and classification into the whole thing, and says, yes, but that thought reading goes only on within its own realm. That different beliefs also have different awakenings, and as we progress spiritually, we leave behind other states of belief, and we can no more commune between them. See, again, this proves what she said there in Miss Selenia's writings, that these communication are always within the own realm of human belief. Never between a realm of human belief and spiritual understanding. There is no communication between them. Therefore, there is no communication between people living on this earth and those who have gone through the experience called death and have gone on. There is no such a thing. The communication which come from the so-called departed are communication from the beliefs which they held as long as they are here, and not only that, from the belief which we hold about them, and which the general atmosphere holds about it, and not actually from a departed. They are different awakenings, and in different awakening there is no more communion between them. Just as there seems to be no communion between Christian Science and theology. So if being a Christian Science practitioner and an old-fashioned medical doctor, they just don't understand each other. There is no common ground on which to build. And I think that's also so important to see when one tries to argue the point of Christian Science, say with a physicist or with anybody. It's no use to argue with anybody on it, because the status of consciousness are so different, until we say, well, let's have the proposition of mind first, that all is mind. Then we have a basis. Then we can argue also with a physicist, if he accepts that. If he doesn't accept the basis as divine mind, well, we can talk as long as we want, we never have a common basis. And so there is no communion and no understanding between each other. And so the only thing which is left is to consciousness, to the Christ consciousness, which is leavening and leavening and leavening. But that's the question of the sixth chapter. Then we come to the third subtone, principle as soul. See, after having said that that thoughts are things, that thoughts are tangible to mortal consciousness and to consciousness. After having said that as principle as mind, she said, but communication within the mental realm is only possible within its own mental realm, not between different mental realms. Having said that, she goes to the third point and says, having shown that there are different mental realms, we must be sure in our consciousness that we don't think that these different mental realms are of the same value, have the same power, are of the same influence, are of the same magnitude, that they don't equal, but that they are very unequal. And so she brings in that point where she says, therefore we have to ask ourselves very much if it is the human mind or if it is the divine mind which is influencing one. Because the claim of spiritualism is, the claim of every mental science is, that mentality is mentality, and therefore that every mentality has the same faculty, the same power, the same authority, the same force, and so on. And so just as the prophets of Baal tried to equal what the prophets of Jehovah did. Just so today, any mental science, anyone confessing to a mental science thinks that with mentality one can do what one can do with any mentality. That there are at the moment we don't see a principle of spirit, there are differences of mentality. That there are differences of mentality, divine mind mentality, or the human mind mentality, or the mortal mind mentality. If we don't see this difference of mentality, or the mortal mentality compared with the immortal mentality, if we don't see that there is classification in the whole thing and order in the whole thing, we fall into temptation, third, to think that they are all equal, that they are all, that mentality is always identical. Mentality is mentality. Mentality is put equal to mentality, but not in Christian Science. In Christian Science, that's, I think, one of the greatest merits of Mrs. Eddy, that she has drawn the sword and cut apart that mental realm and has put order into that mental realm and has enthroned the divine mind as the only mind, as the only mentality. And that she has seen that any other mentality is only a so-called mind, a so-called mentality. Therefore she has given that term mortal mind. That's one of the great, great achievements, I think, of Mrs. Eddy, to have seen what psychology doesn't see, what spiritualism doesn't see, what Eastern necromancy doesn't see, what any other Eastern mental science doesn't see, what even the modern sciences in America, like the science of mind and the science of I don't know what and so on, and of mental thinking and constructive thinking and positive thinking, doesn't see. They don't see that importance of having a classification in mentality and make that classification and see that each classification is not equal in power and in importance and in reality to each other. But that what is important for us is to see what is superior. Shall the divine mind influence us, or shall we devote ourselves and give in to the human mind? Because the prophets of Baal wanted to do and claimed to do to equal the influence of the prophets of Jehovah, just as in Egypt the magicians wanted to equal the power and the wonders of Moses and Aaron. And as you know, they could equal the first and the second sign, but they couldn't equal the third sign. See, we are here in the third principle of soul. They can never prove that mortal mind comes from the divine mind. That they can't prove. There they said, that's the finger of God. Here we can't go any more further. The moment they would have to prove that their power is from God and is sinless, was the plague of the lice, you say, flea and lice, or the flies and lice, the gods of sin, you see, there the whole thing was uncovered. There they couldn't anymore do, and they said to Pharaoh, now what Moses does, that's the finger of God, we can't do it anymore. They couldn't prove that mentality is divine mentality. Their mentality was not identical with the divine mind, with the divine mentality. So they had to give in. And that's the point where we have to see, you see, that whatever the fakirs and the yogis and all the people and the necromancers of Africa and of Asia and so do, what the modern necromancers in our country and your countries may do, that they can always show something in the line of the first and second step. They can always show that mortal mind has force. And they can always show that this force can move matter. But the moment they would have to prove that it is from God and is a savior, they can't. Because it doesn't come from God. What doesn't come from God cannot prove that it is divine, and cannot prove divine effects, and nothing like that. That's where the crucial point comes in. That's where we have to turn our thought to God and see, let's be awake, that not the human mind, not the divine mind, that nor clairvoyance, nor mesmerism is trying to get hold of us, because they can produce phenomena. Let's see that only the divine mind is beginning to govern us and influence us and to become our being.